time. It's always vanishing. The commute, the errands, the work functions, the meetings, selling your car. Unless you sell your car with Carvana. Get a real offer in minutes. Get it picked up from your door. Get paid on the spot. So fast, you'll wonder what the catch is. There isn't one. We just respect you and your time. Oh, you're still here? Move along now. Enjoy your day. Sell your car today. Carvana. Pickup fees may apply.
If needlework is your passion, whether you're stitching by hand, machine, or mixing it all up, you're going to want to hear about the Mr. X Stitch Contemporary Needlework Prize 2025. This prize celebrates the best in modern stitch and it's open to creatives from all around the world, whether you're a student or an emerging artist or a seasoned professional. And the best part, you don't have to send your work anywhere. Just upload high-resolution images to a private folder we will send you after you enter. You can enter more than one category, for instance, hand embroidery and 3D textiles. Just grab an entry for each one. And if you've got a student ID, you can get 50% off the entry price as well. The deadline for entering is 30th of June 2025, and entries are now open at xstitchmag.com/prize-entry. Thanks to our brilliant sponsors, Bookmarked Hub by SearchPress and David and Charles, and the legends at Lowry Workstands. If you've got the stitch bug, this is your time. Show us what you've got. Enter the prize now. Visit xstitchmag.com/prize-entry to get your ticket today. A simple and complicated in equal measure, Sally Maver is a mixed media artist who, for over 40 years, has been creating charming vignettes and worlds of creativity that have been featured in children's books, illustration, and many other places. Her work is technically excellent, is packed with joy and charm, which sounds daft, but when you see her work, you'll understand what I mean. Her design skills are excellent, and her techniques, although she doesn't really use that many techniques, the way she creates these miniature worlds is just marvellous. It's just marvellous, I tell you. This is the second part of our needle exchange. We talk about how Sally's work does explore topics that are a bit more controversial than her commercial work may allow, shall we say, you know, and the impact that having political elements to her work has had, both on her own process and on her sense of well-being. Sally certainly experienced the best and the worst of social media, shall we say that much. And obviously we talk about her inspirations, the books she loves, the music she likes to listen to. As I said in the previous episode, which if you haven't listened to it, please do go back and have a listen. Sally has been making this work, and it's the work that she was made to make. From a young child, she started doing this kind of work. And as she says herself, all she's ever really been doing ever since is playing with dolls' houses. She was a wonderful person to have a chat with. I'm so grateful for her time. I'm in awe of her storytelling capabilities, and hopefully you'll enjoy this podcast as much as I enjoy talking to Sally. If you have enjoyed it, feel free to send me a DM on the Mr. X Stitch Instagram and let me know what you thought. And by all means, share this podcast with one other person who you think will enjoy it. I'll be back next week with someone from a very different part of the needle ecoverse. But until then, enjoy the show. Spinning through your Instagram feed then, at one point I discovered a doll that was Vladimir Putin. And I thought it'd be interesting to talk about that whole scenario, because obviously, you know, we've talked about the way things have been, you know, the darker pieces that you do in relation, you know, as a nice counterbalance to all the other stuff. And then you had this entire satirical project. I'd just really like you to kind of say about it, and then we'll talk about the consequences of it as well, because it sounded like it was quite a profound thing that was maybe more profound than you anticipated.
Yes. So 8 years ago, when Donald Trump was elected first, my reaction was to put my feelings into my art. That was sort of how I coped with it. Mm. And I know I knew a lot of other people who also were struggling And I thought, well, I'll share it on my social media. So I started making these little cartoons, satirical cartoons, and I would make these little dolls that were real people in this sort of political world and world leaders, and little made up these little scenarios, and they were gentle and smart, and I started putting them out and on social media, and it really was something I needed to do. Mm-hmm. And it felt like I was at a point in my career where I could do anything I wanted to. Mm-hmm. It didn't matter what people thought. Didn't matter how many followers I had. Didn't matter if people left me or were angry with me. I had the security to know that I can do this. Mm-hmm. And I don't have any employees. I'm not going to lose, affect other people's lives. I'm just going to affect my life, and I can do it. Mm-hmm. I'm a woman. I have a platform. I can say something. Mm-hmm. So I thought, sort of as my patriotic duty in a way to do this. So I started putting these things out, and the reactions were mixed. Most people really, really liked it and supported me. And some people were so disappointed in what I was doing. And I was ruining this world. I was ruining their hobby.
Right.
They said. And I was not qualified to have a political opinion.
Right.
And they told me to go back to the fairies.
Oh, really?
And I said, what? The fairies they're the ones who told me to do this. It's like, they're the ones who spurred me on to do this.
Yeah.
And so I learned about having criticism. Before this, I had nobody criticize what I was doing. What I was doing is too nice.
Mm.
And now it was sticking the needle in, and for some people. So I really learned how to kind of navigate that. I'm still learning how to navigate that in terms of social media and Facebook and the comments people make. How much monitoring you have to do of your sites, deleting things, blocking people. What is a sort of fair discourse, and what isn't? Making all these decisions. I got so that I developed a thicker skin, because I felt like, this is my art. This is what I'm doing. If you don't like it, that's okay.
Yeah.
And that's what I just kept telling people in writing. This is my art. This is what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And I think that some people who followed me didn't really know that or think about that aspect of it. They thought of it more of it as a commercial enterprise almost.
Mm.
Like I was making these dolls, and it was this something that it was all about sales and a company, thinking in terms of being a company instead of being an artist.
Mm.
And then I started to feel like a real artist. I mean, I knew I was an artist, but I was so tired of people talking about my perfect little stitches. And now they weren't talking about my perfect little stitches. They were talking about what my art was saying.
Yeah, yeah.
So I felt empowered in a way, and I kept it up for a year and a half. My husband and I, did the photography. We made a stop motion animation. We put that out into the world. And at some point I had to go back to making my other things, because I had a contract to make a book.
Right.
So I went back to that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, but yeah, you're okay. You just carry on. It sounds like that's the thing. Like, upon reflection, I think you said it reinforced A, your sense of being an artist, and then B, the validity that anybody can represent their opinion through their art. Perhaps there is a judgment in the breadth of, whether you choose to share it on social media, because I think that's the tipping point, isn't it? That's the bit where you open the floodgates, is if you choose to put it out there where anybody behind a computer somewhere can like have at you. But that shouldn't stop people from expressing their views through their medium anyway.
Yes, but it is a minefield out there. Mm. And it takes a lot of time away from making art. And as just an individual person, it's very hard to do it all. Mm. And so I'm not ready to jump back into that because yeah. I still have this sort of part of me that just wants to sit and stitch and not have to think about that kind of stuff.
Yeah. But I think, I mean, thinking about that, though, you know, kind of regardless of, it doesn't have to be politics, does it? It's just, if you care about something, as you said yourself, you know, we can do these projects that are commercially driven, people making things, you know, you being requested to make certain things for people. And then, and I've spoken to this about several people, you know, the artistic urges come around the corner, particularly if you're like Danielle Clough was saying the same thing, you know, commercial art and then your own personal expressions. And then yeah. whatever your political feelings are, and that's political with a small p, if you're able to express those through your art, that's also kind of you just sharing your truth, isn't it? And you can just stick it up on the wall in your house. You don't need to put it out there for vast public consumption, but we should encourage people to express themselves through their art as part of like the throughput, right? Because those things bubble to the surface and it's good therapy for us to get them out.
Yes, I think that's a wonderful observation. Yeah. Yes.
Just don't put it on Twitter. You're asking for trouble, isn't it, at the end of the day?
Right. Just know the potential before that. So I think about that now more than I did 8 years ago. Mm. I was kind of naive thinking, oh, I'll just put this out. Not, you know, people will see the truth, but we live in a very, very odd time. And so...
You still can't win for trying. I mean, I've been on the receiving end of it as well. You know, anybody with a reasonable platform gets it at some point. And I think you sort of learn, don't you? You learn the bits to do. But I think it's just, yeah, I don't think people should be afraid of expressing themselves, but they just need to be conscientious about where they do it. Maybe stick it on a fence post. Or like when you get craftivism where people will make things, particularly positive affirmations, and then just go and leave them in other places for people to just find or consume. You know, I think that's quite a good way of making a difference. Do you have many people who, not imitate, have you inspired other people? Have people been in touch with you who've seen your vignettes, your bas reliefs, and then you've inspired them to create their own?
I believe so. I do. People send me photographs of things they've worked on that are inspired by what I make, and it's very nice. It's really wonderful to see, and but I don't, you know, teach per se. Hmm. Or, you know, have patterns. And I get a lot of requests for that kind of thing. And it's the whole idea of making a pattern of some of my art pieces. It's just, yikes. Mm-hmm. I mean, what? I mean, why would anybody even think of that? But in this needlework world, that is the norm. Mm. And so I have to realize that and understand that a lot of people use patterns and don't think that they can come up with ideas on their own. And sometimes you have to use patterns for a while to build up your confidence, and then you can change things a little bit here and there and then do something a little more individual. But the idea of teaching what I do, it's not that I'm opposed to it or don't want it out in the world or want to keep everything for myself. That is not the case. It's that I don't like the process at all of trying to just picking down every little detail of it, do this, do that, the other thing. It's like, it's just excruciating. Mm. And you'd think that somebody who as detailed as myself might actually like that kind of thing, but But no, not. It's because it's like rehashing. I've already made it. I don't want to have to figure out how I did it and tell people how, you know, explain to people how to do it. So I'll take videos of while I'm working, and then I'll put those out. And people have really enjoyed these stitch minutes that I make, which is a minute's worth of just me making something, stitching. And I don't have to explain it in words. I just have to show it.
Yeah, I think that's what's nice. I think that's the trade-off. You're not being a diva about your work, are you? Like you say, it's like you're... It doesn't feel, you're not somebody who wants to teach, but you're happy to show by proxy. You know, someone could... If they could find the magic pathway to get into your studio, someone could, in theory, sit by and watch you while they were doing their own thing or something like that. But Mr. Right. Tumnus will probably send them off in a different direction when the time comes.
Right.
I still think you need to have a magic door into your, like, you know, the back of a something or a panel that moves or something like that. It feels like a natural occurrence. Do you have any other artistic pursuits, or is this... This is your thing. Is there anything else that you do around the sides?
Oh, artistic. Well, I don't know if you call it artistic, but I'm a real big gardener and vegetable garden. And I love dancing. And I just love cooking. I love anything. I love domestic stuff. I'm just a total domestic. I love doing the laundry and hanging it out on the line. You know. Amazing. Those kind of things.
You just move into my house. It sounds wrong.
But I think that art infuses everything in my life, in the space I live in, where I live, the outside, the inside. It's an art piece for me. So I don't really, it's just living. And I think that a lot of artists do that. I mean, this is their life. They're creating something. They're creating their life. So that's what I'm always doing.
Have you got any particular veg that you're really great at growing? You got any things?
This is a terrible year for vegetables, so I don't feel very confident. But I did grow some carrots for the first time, successfully.
Excellent.
They weren't just like tiny little things. They were full carrots.
Yeah.
And I planted these seeds that were different colors. There was red and purple and yellow. And that's why I bought seeds, of course, to have colorful carrots.
I got told by someone that back in the day, carrots were red and yellow. I mean, I knew that, and purple as well. But they bred orange ones because I think people thought that red carrots were kind of from the devil. And so they were kind of bred away because people were so suspicious about it.
Yes.
Love that. I grew some carrots once because I like a bit of veg growing. I don't have a lot of time for it now. I managed to do some tomatoes and some red onions this year. But I did some carrots once and didn't prepare the soil. And it was quite thick soil. So all of my carrots came out looking like really arthritic hands. You know, it was just like... I mean, they tasted all right. You couldn't peel them for love nor money, though. It's impossible. But yeah, I love a bit of that. I love a bit of that. Let's dive into some cultural touch points with you, if I may. Do you have a favorite band or a favorite album?
Ah, okay. Luckily, you prepared me for these questions.
These are tough questions. Never mind the artistic journey. That's easy. Favorite band? Very true.
Well, I really like Natalie Merchant. I've forgotten the band that she was in. But anyway, I like her as an individual solo artist. And her album, Ophelia, is my favorite.
Okay. Do you listen to music while you're working?
Yes, I listen to music. And there's this great radio station in Boston that has sort of folk rock, more folky stuff, and it's a public radio station, so there are no ads, and it's just pretty amazing. And I also have Spotify and listen to what I want to listen to, but I don't listen to books on tape or anything like that because I can't afford to get engrossed in the story, because then I won't pay attention to what I'm making, because I need to focus. It's not mindless work. So People ask about that too.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like if you're an author, you couldn't really listen to someone
telling
a story, isn't it? It'd be too distracting. Does the music you listen to affect the work? Do you listen to particular genres of music because you want to be in that kind of space?
I suppose so. I tend to go for more for the folk stuff, and nostalgic for my age group, which is 69 years old. So whatever we listen to, the Beatles, nobody can write a song like the Beatles anymore. Taylor Swift.
Do you have a favorite Beatles?
Well, what's that? Do I have a favorite Beatles? No, I don't.
Maybe rubber
soul or something like that. Because it brings back memories of my youth, you see. Yeah. So I can just be there.
I'm going to ask this question. Do you talk to your characters?
I don't. No, I don't. Because I don't really talk to anybody anyway.
Okay.
I'm not really a talker, even though I'm very talkative with you.
Yeah.
But I don't talk to them. My husband and I hardly talk to each other. We're fine with that.
I was going to say that might be the secret to success for a marriage.
We made this stop motion animation in the basement. We spent a year in the basement, 7 days a week together working on this thing. Hardly said a word because it turns about, talk about focus, doing stop motion animation. You have to be right on purpose every second. And, We survived, maybe because we didn't talk.
I like that. Do you have a favorite book or a favorite author?
Well, I really love Barbara Kingsolver. And one of her first books, The Bean Trees, I think what may have been the first book I read of hers. I love it. And I am right now reading her new one, David Copper. What it's called? No, it's not. No, it's Demon. Demon Copper. Well, I can't even think of it, but it sounds like David Copperfield, but it's not.
Demon Copperhead.
Copperhead, yes. And she won a Pulitzer Prize for it. Yeah. And it's just pretty amazing. I love the way she expresses things without using a lot of adjectives.
Right.
She is able to just put you there and you know what she's talking about by metaphor mostly.
Right. Yeah. I read 100 Years of Solitude not that long ago and was very enchanted by the way that he wrote the story, like his use of language. And then I've been trying to read a book called Shantaram and I've kind of given up because I wasn't really feeling it. But now I'm about to start reading Elena Ferrante. And I feel like she's going to be another one of those people whose craft of the language is that thing, isn't it? They can just say a sentence and you can go, oh, yeah, like, good sentence. And I think sometimes, as well as a good story, you know, that's the thing you need to keep you driving on, isn't it? Just to be like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, Well, it's like, I think about writing and art and editing and making art is just so linked. Because when I'm working on something, I use a lot of found objects in my art. And it's very selective what I choose to put in there. I have a lot of stuff. I collect lots of things, boxes full of things, and just go through to find that little thing. And sometimes I reject it. It's like it's bringing too much attention to itself.
Right.
It doesn't contribute to the art. That's the important thing. The whole composition, the whole whatever it is you're trying to say. And I think it's the same with writing. When you're constructing a sentence, are you just trying to show off in your sentence? Or are you trying to communicate something? And take out that fancy word because you put it in there because you want to show, oh, I know this fancy word. But take it out. It's a similar kind of thing.
Yeah, I always used to say people, some people call a spade a spade. Some people call a spade a shovel. Some people call a spade a galvanized steel digging implement. And you just think, I don't really need you in there particularly.
Yes.
I was going to ask you actually, with some of your vignettes, so I was thinking about the wee little players, and there's one piece I saw where like there's a tiny laptop and there's various other things. Like, do you make those pieces? Do you tap into the Dolls House community, or do you find these pieces? Like, where, how do you get a tiny laptop?
I made that. It's actually made out of cardboard.
Okay.
But it has metallic paint to make it look metal. Oh, I have a big collection of dollhouse miniatures that I will bring in, to help sort of round out something. But if I can't find it, I'll make it. So I really have an interest in dollhouse miniatures, but find that, like, I was just in this museum in Chicago, the Art Institute, and downstairs they have all these rooms that are perfectly crafted for different time periods. And everything is just exquisitely done. Mm-hmm. And I was looking at those and I'm thinking, you know, if I take a picture of this, it's going to look exactly like it does in real life, in the real scale. What's the point in making it little, other than that you can have this experience of looking at it little? I like things that my miniatures and my miniature scenes are not as perfect.
Right.
I mean, yes, you can see the scale, but you can also see that that's an acorn there, or that's a thimble used to make to like a cheese grater. Mm-hmm. I take these other things, and it's almost like The Borrowers. Remember those books The borrowers? They have the spool of thread and they have a table made out of it. That's the kind of miniatures that I like. It's just much more playful and fun. I'm not trying to replicate real life perfectly. Mm. I mean, how boring. I have a lot of people in the miniature world are interested in what I do and follow me. My work is like, it has so many little tentacles going out. There's miniatures, there's children's book illustration, there's the needlework, there's fiber art, and doll making. Mm. I mean, there's so many different areas, but I'm not really 100% in any one of those. I'm just doing my art, and other people can come in from these different groups and get something out of it.
Yeah. No, it very much feels like that, like 100%, all the way through. Even when I was listening to you and Gail's interview, you know, you're just like, Sally's doing Sally. Sally's art is Sally. And Sally, one day you may leave this mortal coil, but I suspect you will somehow end up in a small doll version of yourself somewhere in a land somewhere or something or other. And I love that idea of like the using the objects, like you said, using a thimble as a cheese grater still retains that connection to the fundamentals of childhood Dolls House making and the imagination and that kind of thing, isn't it? So you're still disarming the seriousness of it all, remaining there in the play world.
Right.
Do you have a favorite TV show? Was there a good film that you've seen recently?
Oh, TV show.
Favorite film?
Oh, that's a hard one. You didn't give me any preparation
probably
for that
didn't
one.
Give you, you probably don't have any time to watch.
Oh, my favorite new TV show.
No.
I'm terrible with titles.
Do you watch much telly, or are you so busy, like, tending your lands?
This is another thing I will admit, is that I went for years without watching television, like 25 years. We didn't have a TV.
Okay.
When our children were young, it was just easier.
Mm.
It's no television, no for anybody.
Yeah,
and it was just, you know, we didn't have to deal with the whining or the fighting, and we did things. There's other stuff going on. So in a way, I feel like I'm kind of removed from the culture that was in these certain TV shows in the 80s. Like in the 80s, I have no idea what the music was going on. I mean, I hear these terms and grunge rock or whatever. And I'm like, what in the world is that? And I had little babies. I was nursing babies. I was not paying attention to popular culture, what was going on with the music. Mm-hmm. And my mother actually did comment to me years and years ago. I was born in the middle of the 50s, and she had these three little children. She wasn't paying attention to popular culture. She didn't pay attention to Elvis or any of those other popular singers. Mm. That she wasn't into that.
Yeah.
And I felt the same way in the 80s. So no TV, no popular radio, no pop songs, just sort of, I'm in, and again, I am creating my own world and sort of keeping the rest of the world out so that I can create the world that I want up until the point when I felt like I was going to bring the real world into my art, which is fairly recently.
I guess so. If you want to go and watch a travel documentary, you simply arrange a few of your vignettes on a shelf somewhere and spend time looking at them to the same effect.
No. Yeah, but I do watch Netflix now.
Right.
What happened was I broke my wrist, and so for 4 months I couldn't work to get back, because I need both my hands to work.
Yeah, that can't have been good.
And I was going crazy, so we subscribed to Netflix. And then that was the end. We were back. We were in.
Yes. I mean, so did you ever go to cinema? Did you ever do films instead?
Oh, yeah. You would go to the movies. Okay. Yeah, definitely.
Do you have a favorite film?
I mean, it wasn't as if my kids didn't have any movies.
Yeah, right. Yeah, they just lived in a box. They didn't know who E.T. was.
Yeah, they knew. And they went to friends' houses, and they knew about Ninja Turtles and, you know, all those kind of things.
Yeah, they're just staring at these big white boxes being like, what's that? That'd be kind of amazing. Right, okay, final one then. Is there a fact that not a lot of people know about Sally Maver?
Well, I'm so glad you gave me advance notice of this one, because I would just be going, and I thought about it for a long time and actually was feeling like kind of mad at the question. Like, how could you ask somebody that question?
I
it's
know.
So invasive.
It is a bit cheeky, isn't it, really?
But at the same time, I felt the feelings that I was feeling were like, oh, yeah, I do have some things in my, you know, that I've done in my life that nobody know about. Like, when I was in college in the 70s, I went streaking with my friends around the college campus.
Amazing.
It was kind of a... very, you know, we had body paint.
Okay.
So we were artists, you see.
Right.
So we painted each other's bodies, and then we ran around. But it was kind of, the reaction of the other students was kind of creepy.
Right.
So it doesn't have, it sounds really fun, but there is this real dark side to it.
Yeah.
So I don't think many people know that. I mean, some people might think that I'm sort of this gray-haired stitching lady just doing my own thing, but I'm kind of feisty.
Yeah, I like that. I like that kind of feistiness. It's there. It's kind of swathed in felted fabric from time to time, but it lies underneath.
Right.
We like that. There's an animation show I've seen recently, which was based around a podcast, and I think the podcast host asked something of his guest like, now, what's one fact that not many people really understand about you, but that makes you secretly feel ashamed of yourself? And I was just like, oh, my God, that really sounds like the thing I'm asking. I was like, oh, God, I'm going to have to dial that back. Do you know what I mean? I'm just trying to get, like, you know, here's the thing. Not like, what's that thing that you really wish you could say to your parents that would make them feel proud of you? And I'm like, no, not going there. That could be a bit bad. We run the risk of that sometimes. There's another podcast I used to listen to, and the trailer would always start out with, like, whoever the guest was gently crying because he's just gone, do you think your father's proud of you these days? Or whatever. You're like, no, I'm not going to do that.
Yes.
Oh man, that was good. But streaking, good. I mean, have you ever got any of your characters streaking? Is that a thing? Is there a tiny version of?
Oh, I have made during arts in art school. I made some nude, fully nude dolls. I don't know where they are today.
They're being stared at weirdly by some other dolls.
Yeah, so that's as far as I have gotten. I even had some nude couples in a bed, and they were had wire, so you could put them in different positions.
I like it. I like it. Dr. Alex Comfort springing back to mind there. What have you got on the horizon then? You said you've got some more shows lined up in the distance.
Yeah. I have a show coming up in 3 years, close to where I live on Cape Cod. And it's in this wonderful museum called the Cahoon Museum, which I had shows in before. And we're working that far ahead because I need time to make the stuff. I mean, it does take a while, and I want to have some new things in this show. So I'm thinking differently. I'm thinking larger scale. I'm thinking more installation, more environmental. But it will probably include some of my framed pieces from the past as well to fill it out.
That's
what I'm working on now.
This is like you giving yourself free rein now.
Yeah. And it's like having a room to play in and to decorate and to figure out how to transform it into an experience for people. That's what I really want to do. I want visitors to feel, to sort of like be in awe in a way, or be transported to something, and feel like have a feeling come in them. And it's more like sort of a feeling that a child might have. And most of the people who come see my art are adults, older adults, and who make things themselves and or not. But I want to bring back that sense of childhood wonder, that they can experience that when they're in my show.
I don't doubt you'll achieve it. I think there's no doubt. As we said, maybe some uncertainty, but I don't think there's any doubt that you'll do it. It's going to be
interesting. I know I can do it, and it's exciting, and it's just I feel like there's so much more in me. I in a way, when I first became a grandmother, which was a year and a half ago, I was thinking, oh, this is it. I don't have to do art anymore. I just want to be a grandmother. Mm-hmm. And it was this overwhelming sense of peace and like contentment that I felt, and just like love, absolute love. And now that I've had a little bit more time to get into the role of being a grandmother, I realize, oh, I can be a grandmother and do some art. It's going to take a little bit of time away from it, but it's going to make my art better.
Yeah.
Being a grandmother is going to make my art better.
Yeah, I can see that. I can understand that. Because you do, there's that capacity, and you feel like you're stretched, and then you go, oh, actually, no, I'm not stretched. Or I've grown. Again, you've just grown into the space, haven't you?
Right.
That's going to be amazing. Sally, thanks for having a needle exchange with me.
Oh, this was so delightful, Jamie. I really, really enjoyed it.
Thanks for joining me on another Needle Exchange. I hope you enjoyed the show. I'd love to hear from you, so feel free to email hello@needle.exchange, that's NWDL.exchange, with any thoughts, comments, or feedback. And if you want to keep up with all the news, sign up to the Needle Exchange mailing list at bit.ly/needle exchange. See you next time.